episode 315 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons, and we've got J-Bo. I mean, I don't know what else to say. He played for Iowa for 16 years, and now we get to talk about all that, plus his advocating for student-athletes, the podcast that he was running, leaving the shoes at Iowa State, missing the free throw. All brought to you by DRF Sports, the boys, we love them. Let's have a day. Let's go. Washed Up Walk-Ons fans to episode 315 of the podcast today. Without warning, this was not exactly put out there, although some would think that we would preface this episode, maybe drop some spoilers, but we haven't. We have potentially the longest tenured athlete in the history of NCAA sports with us. Jordan Bohannon joins us, Iowa Hawkeye legend. Now, I think since you're past your career, you are past your career, right?
Not with basketball. I'm still going to continue on, but I'm done with Iowa.
With the Hawks.
That's your question. Yep.
There's no more
any more loopholes that you guys could find to stretch out another year.
Hey, if there would, I would come back in a second. This is forever home for me.
I feel you on that. I think we all could use another year. It seemed like your career was never going to end in like this weird sort of purgatory way. What did it feel like for you, like off the jump, to have a 6-year career?
You know, it's kind of weird to talk about like a 6-year career. Like I was in school for 6 years, but I never really felt it was a 6-year career. Looking at my first senior year, I only played 10 games and I was hurt the entire time I was playing and just battling through hip pain. So I didn't really count that as a year just because I went through like so much like emotional and physical adversity. So that was like kind of a weird year for me. And then that next year I was finally back and healthy, and then we had COVID. So I'm like, this doesn't really feel like another legit, year playing for the Hawks. So, I felt like I played 4 legit years of Iowa basketball. I know that's going to sound crazy out loud, but it's the truth. That's just the reason why I came back, to play in front of my family, play in front of fans again. And, it was the best decision I've ever made in my life.
It felt unfinished.
It really did. That Oregon game, I got a lot of shit, obviously, because I had the worst game of my career. So it almost felt like, I had something just a little more to give back to Iowa City and the University of Iowa and do what I can to help the team, pull off something that hasn't been done since 2006 with that Big Ten tournament title. And, I still get emotional talking about it now because, we went through a lot, myself individually and our team wise to really pull that off. And it was just an incredible feeling.
Yeah, that's something that eluded our podcast. We made it. We did not win. We were close. And it is so incredibly hard to get there. I don't, throughout this next hour or so, there'll be some contrast between both playing a Division I sport, but obviously basketball isn't our thing. On the basketball side of things, is there a way that you can describe how tough it is to make it to that final game in tournament weekend and take home a Big Ten title?
It's incredible hard. I mean, as you guys know, as former athletes playing at the biggest stage possible, at the end of the season, you're facing teams that are playing their best, games of the year. Every single possession is incredibly hard. Every single time you're on defense, every time you're on offense, you have to play and not only to 100% physically, but mentally, you have to be as strong as you ever are in those final minutes of every game. And I think that's what separated us a lot going into that run we had in the Big Ten tournament. It's incredibly hard to beat the teams that we did, no matter if they're good or bad that year. Everyone is playing phenomenal. We were struggling against Nebraska at Nebraska towards the end of the year, and they only won 2 or 3 games in the Big Ten, but they played their best basketball in the year. And it's like that, every single sport. Like I said, you guys know exactly what that's like, and you have to bring your A game. And as cliche as that sounds, it's the truth.
Not to mention health too, right? Like health is huge at the end of a season. And
one, yep.
Yeah, like and you're one to know about being healthy or not, several injuries in your career that we can talk about. And actually I have down, you know, a list of notes, but injuries, obviously a big part of your story. Mentally dealing with that, what did you learn throughout your process of injuring your hip? I think at one point you had an injured hand or something like that. What mental processes did you go through in that whole thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I thought about every single kind of thought you can when you're an athlete and you're going through a tough time. When I first got on campus my freshman year, I remember I was playing so well in the summer, and we had Christian Williams starting at the point guard position. I wrote down a goal sheet I had. I've stuck it to beside my bed. I said I want to, you know, prove my way to be a starter as a point guard in the Big Ten. So I thought about that every single day I woke up, obviously. And, you know, I lacerated my hand webbing between my pinky and my fourth finger. And like my pinky was like dangling off my hand after it happened. I was like dribbling, and then I like looked down. I kind of went in shock after practice. But this was like a week before our first game. So I went for a loose ball and stuck my right hand down, and Nicholas Bear being Nicholas Bear hustled forward, and he pulled my pinky the wrong way. It was on the other side of the basketball. So it like got lodged on a crazy, you know, freak incident. And I was like,
the bear got you.
Yeah, Bear got me. And he knows to this day, we joke about it all the time. I was like, man, I would probably made it started from the day one, but I went down with that injury. So I had like 7 stitches in my hand to start the season, the first like 7 games. And that was my shooting hand too. So, and I just shot like shit the entire like first couple games. I was like, oh, maybe this isn't a real Bohannon. And we got kind of the worst one on the group. I was hearing that a lot. So, but that's honestly like a true, like, kind of adversity you're dealing with when you're going through an injury. And, you know, a lot of people don't know what you're going through half the time because you just try to hide it and play up to your potential. So that's something you kind of have to deal with to go kind of along with your question, is just trying to do what you can with what you got. And that's, I felt like when I stepped, you know, my final time off that court, I honestly, you know, I could look myself in the mirror and said, every ounce of energy that I had an opportunity to give, I gave back to that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kevin, you're sitting there jumping anytime if you have anything.
It's a great mindset that you just gotta, whatever life throws at you, you just kind of have to take in stride and try to do the best you can. Talk about your hip injury. So I actually kind of had the same thing done back in high school. I kind of want to hear how your rehab went. For me, it was like about a 5-month thing. But you know, I was 18 at the time, and you know, I was going to be fine by the time I got in college. What's it like? You know, that would have been your senior year, right?
Yeah. So that was my first senior year.
Yeah. So like, yeah, your first senior year.
Three.
Yeah. What's it like having that kind of like, that kind of injury that has a long rehab time, like at the end of your career and trying to. Like,
yeah. It's incredibly hard. You know, the first one is weird because I got the first one done beginning of the season. After I played the 10 games, that was the first time I ever sat out ever in my entire career playing sports. So deal with that, like emotionally, that was really hard, but I learned a lot on the sidelines. The second one was honestly, like, it was better, like physically, cause I knew what to do already. But my second one actually ended up being worse, like pain wise, just because of the bone that was, so I had the labrum tear. I'm assuming mm-hmm. that's what you had surgery on to, you know, rope that off and stitch it back, whatever they did in there. And then they shave off the bone. And the Dr. Westerman that did it, I think he said like they went through like 4 of the little shave saws because my bone was like so big on my second one. So it was like painfully, it was worse trying to deal with that mentally. But I mean, in the end, it made me stronger just trying to go through. I mean, it's 6 months of, you know, pure rehab basically. And, you know, playing a high level sport, it takes a lot of exertion every single day to, I mean, it's nothing like an ACL or an Achilles, obviously, but it's very painful to deal with for sure.
What was so for me, they made me ride the bike 2 hours every day from the day after surgery for like the first 2 months. Did you have to do something like that too?
Oh yeah. I was like the second one, I was actually like, I was so pissed off I got the second one. I was like trying to get out of bed and move like literally the day after. My mom was like pissed off at me because I was staying at my parents' house at the time. So like I literally get off the bed like the next day and I was like trying to walk on it. My mom's like cussing me out and saying, you just had all this work done on your hip. But yeah, no, we probably went through the same stuff. Like a lot of bike, you know, I don't think I ever want to get on a bicycle ever again in my life after going through two of those things.
Yeah. Iowa football players will echo that.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it works for basketball, but if you're not practicing, your ass is on the bike for 30 minutes during practice.
Same way.
Yep. It's honestly worse than practice.
No, it is worse. That's why I never set out practice usually. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to get on the bike. Like I take more energy on the bike than being in actual practice.
100%, man. To quote a coach of ours, we have a long, prideful tradition of punishing you for being hurt.
I was just going to say, and I lean to doubt that it was this intense in basketball just because we had Doyle and like, we also had so many, like it's such a developmental program when you have dozens of guys who are trying to fill spots, but guys would literally, and Kev, I don't think this was healthy for our team necessarily, but guys would literally, it's like that old quote, unless you're dead or dying, like they would practice so that they don't have to do like PT during practice. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, if you can't practice, then you can't practice. But if, you know, you were borderline, you might be like, hey, yeah, I can at least do some individual stuff, you know, just anything to stay off the bike.
Yeah.
The bike is miserable. Yeah. I 100% agree with that. I don't, you know, like I said, I'm done with it. No bike rides. If I have kids one day, they can get on, they can figure out how to ride a bike themselves.
You're not going to be the Peloton guy now after you're done with your playing career.
Hell no. My brother got a Peloton. I'm like, you're a psycho, but he's also did Ironmans and shit and he's in the Air Force or whatever. So he's a different breed than I am.
Want to take a quick second. DRF, you guys know, I keep telling you, I know it's annoying. We interrupt you, but we got to pay the bills around here. Someone's got to keep this show going. They got to keep the gears turning. And that's me during these ad reads. So just buckle up with me. You could just hit that fast forward button or listen to this deal from the DRF guys. The Stanley Cup playoffs are here. Hockey fans, they're here. So that means daily boosts from player props to which teams will win. Check out DRF Sportsbook every day for their latest boosts. They want to see you guys cashing in during the Stanley Cup playoffs. So they are boosting new odds each and every day. Head over to the DRF Sportsbook app or ia.drf.com and start betting today. DRF, the best place to bet.
I want to get to your family because we just had Henry Marquez on, who also comes from a four brother family. Competition is what runs through the blood of those families. But to finish up on your injury, how many times did it run through your head? And maybe it didn't at all. Maybe it did every day. Like, can I get back to what I was?
I read it, you know, I'd read it, people tweeting at me, you know, my comments on Instagram. Every time I looked at my phone, there's always someone saying something about me being injured again after the second one. So, you know, emotionally, it took a toll on me, definitely, the first and second, you know, both times, honestly. I want to help my team, and I felt like, I don't know, I actually had a friend of mine that had the same surgery, and he was playing at a smaller school, D2 school, and phenomenal high school player. He had it in college and he didn't come back. He couldn't get through the rehab. And really? So like, that was like, I was like, shit, I got to do what he did. And he was like as tough as nails too. So, I had kind of a bad mindset going in that first one too. So
that's scary. That's scary. If you know a tough dude who also went through the same thing and they just couldn't do it, even though, you know, like you've got a different body, a different, whatever, total individual situation, that's a fuck to the mind. That it may not happen.
Yeah. And that's the worst. Like what I don't know what the exact saying is, like your worst, like, I don't even know how it goes, but like your own thoughts are like your worst killer. I don't even know the exact quote with that, but like, it's the truth. You know, I learned it firsthand. And I think that's why, like, now I'm like, so kind of positive and upbeat about life, you know, even when the worst of adversity hits. And, you know, granted, losing a game in any sport's not anything comparable to anything that's going on in the world, to other people's lives. So it put a lot of things in perspective just going through those, for sure. And it sucked, but I'm thankful I went through that.
You know, I listened to you on
teed up with the McCaffreys, and you mentioned how while you were hurt, you got closer with, I'm pretty sure you said, Pat and
Jack Nungy.
Or is Nungy, yeah. And you three got real close because you were all sort of at the same time had something going on. Talk about that and how much that meant to have strength in relationship off the court with your teammates to get you through that time.
It's huge. I mean, you guys playing, you understand that it's a band of brothers when you're going through, you know, 7-8 week or 7-8 month seasons, basically in basketball. And, you know, you're training 12 months around the year, just to, you know, have those shiny moments at night or in the morning, whenever you're playing, just for, you know, a couple hours. So it takes a toll on yourself, and understanding that, you know, the people that are going through the process are only ones that truly know and experiencing everything that you're experiencing. So you have to wrap your arms around, you know, guys that are like that. And, you know, Jack Nungy, I know I'm going to be in his wedding here in a couple of weeks and see him get married, which is really cool.
Let's go.
But to see like where our friendship kind of took off was when we got injured, and understanding, you know, the importance about life and taking a day by day and not, you know, letting, you know, bad days get to your overall health. And that was really important for us too. And that, you know, we're, you know, best as friends because of it now.
That's awesome. Go Kev, you leaning up to talk or no?
No, go for it.
Okay. I'm gonna keep going. Going from teammate brother to real brother, youngest in the fam, had all the expectation, I'm sure. Talk about growing up with that as just like the entire dynamic, right? I have two brothers. I was the oldest. The youngest is always the one who gets beat up, the one who gets picked on, the one who ends up like crying. Shout out to Mama Bohannon for cussing you out too. Shout out to all the moms. This is a day after Mother's Day weekend. But what was that like growing up in your house?
It was so much fun. You know, we got in a lot of fights. A lot of stuff was broken. You know, everything you can imagine growing up in a household with four boys. And, you know, my mom's a saint for her, you know, dealing with us, taking us everywhere, you know, dragging me along to all my brother's games. And it was so much fun. But, you know, it's, you know, to get on an individual kind of perspective, it was really hard for myself growing up in sports. You know, obviously I had an advantage. My brother's playing D1 basketball, so I knew what it would take. But they also set a bar that was unbelievably high, like all winning a state title.
Dude, the highest bar you could have.
Literally possible. Yeah. Winning a state title. They all won, you know, their conference championships. So I was like, no, honestly, like I didn't really accomplish much as a team. So I think that's what kept eating at me, especially coming back from that final year after Coach McCaffrey recruited me. That was a big, you know, decision that I want to kind of leave my mark somehow as a team. You know, I've had some individual accolades, but no, I'll never really take note to that. Other than my assist record, I think that one's really cool just because it kind of helps other people out with that one record. But other than that, records don't really mean shit unless you're, you know, proving it as a team. And I think that's my favorite accolade when we were able to win that title this year.
Which brother was it that came to all your games?
That was Zach.
Are you closest with him?
I'm like, it's weird dynamic. Like I'm really close with him. More probably on an emotional level, just because he's seen all my highs and lows after games and, you know, just being there for me. He never would ever talk about basketball after games, which is really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. But like all my brothers were like, we're different. Like I always worked out with Matt because we're really close in ages. So it's just all different.
Okay. When that started to catch a little wind and like they started doing articles on your brother coming to all your games and stuff, I was like, wow. That's really crazy, especially in basketball, right? Like football, right? There's 12 of them. Seven of them are home games. So like if your family catches the five away games, it's impressive, but it's like, okay. But y'all are playing.
They're on a weekend for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all on the weekend, but like.
It's still a big time commitment though.
Like, it is.
Even for football.
But it's not, it's not basketball. I mean, you guys are off playing tournaments early in the year and you're off in, you know, Rutgers on a Tuesday night.
It's just like.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
what does he do for a job that allowed him to do that?
Man, he's got like four or five jobs. I'm not even kidding. Like
he's an entrepreneur, huh?
He is all over the place. And he's in the military. Like he's the smartest guy. I'm not even just saying this because he's my brother. Like he's literally legitimately the smartest guy I've ever met in my life.
Wow. That's awesome. And he played for which
Wisconsin.
One? Wisconsin. Two of them played for Wisconsin. One played for
UNI, Northern Iowa.
Jesus Christ. I mean, you're does the ball come out at like Thanksgiving? Like the,
not anymore.
No. They're getting too old. They're afraid of injury now or what?
The last time we played 2v2. It was like heading my freshman year in college, and someone rolled their ankle, and then balls were thrown at the Lamar gym in our high school because we had keys to it. So it was a nightmare. We get home. Every time we got home from workout, this is kind of funny that my mom would, first thing she said, is anyone hurt? First thing that she would always say that, because just being a mom, question. She is. Exactly. Yeah.
Was there a hoop in the driveway, or where'd you guys play growing up?
We had a hoop in the backyard. So, you know, always during the winter, we always shovel the backcourt, and we do whatever we can to get shots up whenever. But we were fortunate. We had keys to the Lamar gym, our high school. So we could literally go in, you know, I was able to get, you know, 2 to 3 workouts a day, just going in the early morning, late night. It was going at 2 a.m. in the, you know, late night, early morning, which is kind of the best workouts.
2 a.m.
My senior year, actually, I was weird. I'm not a morning person now, but I would get up at every, and all my senior teammates can attest to this. I got up at every single day at 4 a.m. and got up 500 shots made my senior year in high school. And I doing it now, I just, my body would not be able to handle that. But
shots made take you?
I could do it in about 27 minutes back then.
Jesus. Oh my God.
Yeah. It was, I got it down to a T, but those were just set shots. Like I wasn't moving around. I would just let the gun, shooting gun, you know, pass me the ball, and I would literally just fire up nonstop. I wouldn't take any break.
I spent some time on the gun. Not nearly enough. 500 shots is absurd, but I can it kind of makes sense. I long snap. So it's like shooting free throws basically is how I explain it to people who are unfamiliar with the position. And it's just like, you know, obviously basketball is more because you have to move and you're not just a specialist, but that that repetition is crazy, right? And it's like, how many times did you find yourself like 30 shots deep into, like, you don't even remember the last 30 shots and you're like, I gotta reset, like, hold on a second. Like,
not at all, actually. You didn't? Surprisingly.
Okay, so that's probably why you were good and I was not someone. Because what I was going to get at there is, like, sometimes when I would snap, you would snap like 5 or 6 balls, and then you would, like, every rep, and I imagine with you as well, you want it to be intentional, right? You want to get something out of that shot. You're never just going to shoot to shoot. And sometimes I'd have to stop myself and just be like, whoa, what am I doing? What's the goal here? What am I trying to work on? And same thing with your shot. Like, is my follow through messed up? Am I not getting my body into this? Like, are my feet off? And so shooting that many shots, I figured at some point you'd be like, shit, I don't remember the last 50 shots I took. But again, yeah.
That was more of a college thing, honestly. Like, my high school, I kind of was all about, like, reps back then. Like, I would get – because I felt like I got to my point, my senior year in high school, like, my form was, like, perfect. And obviously not perfect, but as good as enough, I can just get reps up nonstop and not have to worry about, like, creating a bad habit out of it. So when I got to college, I started realizing that it could probably take a little more time on, like, understanding, oh, I'm going to work on, like, shooting this really quick to get off, like, a quick shot if it's a kick out three, kind of be more advanced in that level. But I was crazy back then though, so I didn't really think much of it. So,
well, yeah.
Now you came in, like, right off the bat, and everyone knew, like, you were a great shooter, and obviously it showed on the court. What's something that you, like, you came in and to Iowa and realized, like, hey, I really need to get better at this, and saw yourself progress over your career?
I might get a lot of shit for this just because I got a lot of shit for it in my college, but honestly, my defense, I was really bad. I would literally break down games my freshman year with our assistant coach, Coach Barat, and do exactly, like, we always have these, they're called quarter agilities, and they suck. We go for 4 minutes really hard, and it's all defense stuff. And we do that in off season. We're just really working on our form for defense. So yeah, we do work on defense at Iowa, as people don't want to say it, but
to everyone listening, confirm they play defense.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was a really, really poor defender, beginning my college career. And honestly, I feel like that translated later onto my career because of how bad I was. I kind of want to pride myself on getting a lot better than what I was, because I'm guarding some really, really quick dudes that are guys that I'm not even comparable in speed. And I feel like my form of defensive slides and shuffles just got a lot better from all the work I put in. And it was nowhere, great, but I felt like the talent I was given and athleticism I was given, I was making the most of it.
Yeah, we relate to that on this podcast.
Yeah, that's a common theme here on the Washed Up.
I feel like part of that too was, I mean, I don't think anybody ever described Jordan Bohannon as big boned, right? That's probably not physically it takes a little bit to develop, right? I think that's one of the things that Patrick, from the time he stepped in to sort of where he's at now, a big thing for him has been like physical development, adding good muscle mass, being physical, learning to play that style as well. In high school, you're running around against Iowa high school basketball players. Not that I was any good, but like Iowa high school basketball isn't the cream of the crop necessarily. You can basically run around and do whatever you want if you're like Jordan Bohannon level, right? Pete Jock, I played against Pete. I played with Pete on AU teams in several tournaments. Guys like that, y'all just basically had your way. College, son of a bitch, now I got to create a shot a little bit. Now I got to come off the screens a little harder. Talk about that physical development from year one to year six. Obviously, it was hindered a little bit. And that's also why your career was so extended, but that had to be a big part of it.
Yeah. I the thing that I feel like I always was like number one, every time I was on the court, was my conditioning level. I always felt like I put in so much work to be the most conditioned guy. It kind of showed the plays we'd run. Like we'd run, I'm not going to say the name of the play because coach will get mad, but we would play where I'm running around screens just constantly for 30 seconds of the shot clock under the basket and just trying to get open and move off the ball. And that is really hard to do it constantly for, 4 to 5 possessions in a row. And I just, I always thought like my conditioning level just continued to improve. And, that was part of my number one, like strength, honestly, more than my shooting when I was at Iowa was my conditioning level. And I know Connor and Patrick, they were mentioning it when I was on their podcast. And that's kind of, I helped kind of guys, going back to the injury thing, when guys were injured and, we're going through conditioning in the off season workouts. So, I was always the kind of the guy to try to get everyone back in that kind of the conditioning level and, be that vocal guy, I guess you could say, but yeah, for sure.
So for those of us who stopped playing basketball our freshman year of high school, is college basketball conditioning still suicides or what do y'all do?
No, honestly, we only dedicated 1 month every year to just conditioning, and it's twice a week. That's the core agilities I was talking about earlier. But that's basically the only like conditioning we do that doesn't touch a basketball. Everything else, we get our conditioning from just running up and down the court in practice because we play up tempo. So that's basically it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of the same way. So our conditioning was always in the summer. Mm-hmm. But like, once we got to like camp, then our conditioning was our tempo up speed periods. And, 10 plays later, you're pretty gassed. But yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. You have a block of conditioning. For us, it's 2 months. And, you kind of carry that into the season. And from there, you kind of let your pace of practice keep your conditioning level up.
I always found like the best two, I always thought suicide was like you getting conditioned that way, like you just run, but there's a different like conditioning level being conditioned for like football and basketball and all these other sports. You just can't go out and run sprints.
No doubt.
You have to, it's totally different level. And we learned that the hard way, when we get to college that, it's not, you just can't prepare for it. You literally just have to go out there and play to get ready.
Yeah. You're talking to a guy who learned that the hard way. Bad. bad. Oh man, I'll never forget. I was going to ask the same question, Kev, because it does. Kevin and I both come from a exercise science background, which was our degrees. And so we're interested in the nerdy side of like strength conditioning stuff. So I was curious how much game basketball specific conditioning you did or general conditioning. Like I just didn't see you guys, with the balls off the court on the rack, just going and touching lines back and forth. Although some of that is applicable, it doesn't really become real until you've got the ball in your hands and you've got a defender on you and you're trying to, you're moving in a sport specific way. So you guys are like rounding off screens or you're sprinting the gap or you're out on a fast break.
grab the rebound, go, like stuff like that, that just makes so much sense. And it also becomes a thing where the flow of a basketball game is part of that too, right? Which, listening to the podcast with Pat and Connor, you guys talk about how like a ton of your practice is basically just 5-on-5 scrimmage, which makes sense. That's one of the cool things about listening to that podcast was listening to you guys talk about how for like 7 months from the beginning of when you guys pick it back up sometime around like right now, for those guys, as they go all the way through this off season, is like, usually you've got the same guy on you for the entire season. That aspect is really interesting to me. Like I would not handle that well. It's a good thing I played football, because I would get real chippy about 2 months in.
Well, it's Kluver, I'm
it's a weird dynamic.
You know, we do. You know, you go blocks in 9-on-7. Yeah. You're lined up against the same guy for the entire year.
Yes, but for football, it's like 15 practices in spring, and then you don't actually put the pads on, and you're not really – I mean, they can play 5-on-5 all year long.
Correct. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm just saying. I know it's, you don't ever weird. Line up against somebody, but the rest of us did.
I know.
Yeah, no, I definitely see some commonalities, but it's definitely weird. I mean, there's fights that break out all the time just because of frustration. Like, I mean, it just builds up and up and up and up until, you know, someone unleashes on someone.
Talk about that, because there's a fight, I don't know, what do you say, Clue? At least one every 3 practices or so.
Oh, yeah, I was good. Yeah. A legit
how far did the coaches let it get before they broke it up? Because, you know, a little bit of fight, a little bit of juice in the practice, boost up the competition level a little bit, but you don't want to distract from what you need to get done.
Yeah, Coach Rand, he's pretty good about letting it go. The only way it'll be stopped is like one of the captains step in, and usually the only time like we would step in is if it was got to like a personal level, like we started talking about like shit that's on a personal level. And that's kind of, that was like the crossing the line. Like, okay,
what,
we need
to bringing up somebody's girl or something, or what?
Not, well, that's like, oh, that's like deep level personal.
You gotta save that for the opponents. That's
yeah. Yeah. But no, it got to a couple of times, but you know, it was usually stopped before something really, really bad happened.
I'm number one in the bandwagon of Fran is misunderstood. I am number one. I love Coach McCaffrey from an outsider's perspective. And I know a lot of people don't. A lot of people, you know, red face Fran, whatever, they want to go down that road. I want to hear your thoughts on, is he misunderstood? Why is he, what, you know, whatever, your thoughts on that. And then also back to that conversation, would he ever, or any of the coaches ever, pull a guy aside? You know, maybe the practice is lacking energy or something's just not right, and tell you like, hey, I want you to get in this guy's ass a little bit. Like get him, let's spark a little fire here.
Yeah, no, he's very competitive. And I think that's where his energy obviously comes from. I've always loved coaches that are not, I hate the word hard, I hate the term hard on you. But they want the best out of you. And that triggers them to, you know, where the screaming and yelling comes and takes place, because if they're not doing that, then they're not getting the best potential out of you at the end of the day. I think Coach McCaffrey has been really good about getting guys that are very undervalued and not potential, but athleticism or talent in the first place, that he's able to get that to the next, you know, level and gear to make them perform at their highest level. And a lot of that comes with yelling at you in film and at games when you're not doing something right, because usually when you're not doing something right, you're not, one, there mentally, or two, I mean, honestly, that's probably the only thing. You're just not there mentally. And he hates when people aren't honestly locked in mentally. And when mistakes like that happen, that's when you see the flare-ups and him get really pissed off at his players. But it's never in like a personal level or a shitty tone. Like he's demanding his best out of you, because we're getting the best out of him as well. So it's a two-way street, and I've always respected the hell out of that for him.
I think most people understand that come from a competitive background. Like these coaches, you know, I played for Phil Parker, notorious hothead. But they do it because they want you to perform at the level at which they can see you perform. Everyone has their ceiling, right? But you know, you might feel like you're up here, but he can see you being a much better player than what you're currently playing at. And so when he doesn't see you filling out your potential, that's when, you know, makes him upset. And I know there was a saying on the coach's locker room door at our facility. It was, we're either coaching it to happen or we're allowing it to happen. So that's when these guys feel the need to like speak up and, you know, raise their voice. You know, it'll get the attention of the athlete, and it's never in a malicious way. It's for these guys to get the, you know, get the message across. I think everyone that comes from a competitive background understands that some of these people don't get the fact that.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say is people think like, I don't know, the world's getting a little softer, right?
It is.
and people see that and they're like, well, that's unnecessary, or that's this, or that's that. And one, they're not in the situation. Like, they're not on the court in this game scenario. They don't have the relationship that you do with coach. They don't understand the dynamics and the nuance of you're down three. This is the situation. There's this much time on the clock, yada, yada, yada. But what you said, Kevin, is the most correct. There is, they have this perspective, this vantage point of, they know that you're not doing your best. And they know that great coaches know how to individually with each one of their players pull that out of them. And oftentimes it's that blunt, brash, like, hey, stupid motherfucker, wake up and play better. Like, just relax, play better. And I always love that. I love the, what you said you don't like to describe it as, but I love that hard coaching. My dad was that way. I don't know if you know Al Jones. You may have come across him. Yeah. So I played for the Storm. I had no business being on the Storm, but it was in our grade. It was always Kingdom, the Barnstormers, the Attack, and us. And all of those, all the guys I played against, like, it was always that way. And what is your feeling on, do you feel a shift when Coach Doyle and his whole thing went down a couple years ago for Iowa football? A whole part of his thing was like, oh, he's a, like, the best way for me to describe Coach Doyle is like, he is old school, right? And that can get a bad rap too. Is there a new age of player that requires a softer coaching because it's a softer generation? Or is that like, what are your thoughts on that for the basketball perspective?
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic. And I love, my dad was the same way. I mean, very hard on me and wanting the best out of me, always yelling after games and stuff like that. So I kind of grew up in that environment, and I was not, you know, afraid or, you know, intimidated when I came to Iowa and Fran was like that. So, but I think there is a different set of feel for these players coming in. I wouldn't say soft just because, I don't know, a couple of years ago I would, and then I started doing all this work for college athletes. I learned like what the background of some of these athletes are going through and deal with, and learning that, you know, you can't talk to some players like you're talking to another player. And
yeah,
it's just a weird dynamic because there's so much going on now with social media, and players are so invested in what other people think now. And I think that has taken a toll on a lot of these athletes of not, you know, getting constructive criticism the right way from these coaches. So I think there's a big mixture of all those things I talked about. But I do agree the world is kind of getting soft. So something needs to be done on that level as well. But it's weird. It's hard to explain.
It's 100% different though. Like, it is not 2000 anymore. Like,
no,
you know, we're a little older than you, but not too much. I feel like when we were in middle school, high school, it was just more okay to have that hard style of coaching. And now it's more like, well, we don't want to hurt the kids' feelings. Like, everybody needs a participation trophy, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, Jesus. I mean, I don't know what it is. And you're right. I love that you mentioned that a lot. It's not that they're soft in some cases. In some cases, they're definitely soft.
Yeah.
But in some cases, you don't know what this kid came from environment wise, what his home life looked like, how he grew up, who was a part of his life, how he was talked to as a kid, both from his adult parent figures or his coaching figures, or, and so it's a very dynamic issue. But like, I don't know, man. like you're not going to be able to yell. There's going to be a, there's going to be a voice level ceiling where you're going to get a technical foul if you go like in 10 years, because that's just the way it's moving. But I don't know. It's weird.
I don't know how to deal it, to tackle it. It's a weird issue. It's a problem. I don't even know how to go about it, because there are like those real instances where kids do go through a lot of shitty stuff growing up.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of instances out there like guys just don't want to work hard.
Yeah. That was actually another topic in the podcast. It came up briefly with Pat and Connor. You didn't name names, which I love, but you were definitely thinking of somebody, one or two people. You're talking about guys being soft in practice. And it goes back to like, they just show up and they're not there mentally. How did you, maybe early in your career, but definitely as a senior or older guy leader in the program, how would you approach a situation like that on a day where like some guy's just not, he's just not doing it, and it's an effort thing and he can do better and you know he can?
Well, a lot of, like my sophomore year, I would kind of treat everyone the same way. That's kind of my sophomore year. I think I kind of definitely stepped up into more of a vocal. So I was like always yelling and screaming, and I got pissed when people weren't giving their all, or I knew they weren't mentally there. And then senior year, I learned that, you know, a lot of people handle that differently, but it, like being on a team, you know so much about, this is kind of go off the rails for a second, but it's going to come back full circle. Like you know what everyone's going through, like off the court and off the field. So like, you know, if guys are going out the night before games or night before these practices early in the morning, and if they're not there fully 100% invested when they step foot on that court or on that field, we're going to know why. And that was always a huge thing for me and the guys that I was really close to on the team. When that was happening, we knew right there and then to say why, and like make it known in front of everyone on the team what's going on. And you know, you get embarrassed when someone calls you out like that. So, and I've always been like, if you can do whatever you want off the court, off the field, like I don't really give a shit. But as soon as you step foot back with the team, you need to be there 100%. Like, I don't care if you're hungover. I don't care. You know, if you have a twisted ankle, you know, you fight through it, you play through it, and you give everything to your guys because they deserve it.
Yeah. I think it's good to embarrass your teammate in the right way.
Yeah.
Embarrass is maybe a bad word again, but because it just, people won't get it.
Just holding people accountable.
Yeah.
Right.
Because man, there's nothing stronger than a coach, or take it one step further, an older guy who, you know, is doing everything right. Every person in the program knows he's the guy. He shows up early. He always is getting his treatments. He's always eating the right stuff. He's always going to bed early. This guy never does shit. And when that guy says something, boy, is that fucking powerful. Like, especially in front of everyone. And then, and then that guy who's not doing his shit can do nothing but just look down and be like, yeah, you're right, I'm fucking up. Like, that's on me. And that works better than anything.
And it just takes one guy on a team. Sorry to interrupt you, but
I
feel like this is important. This is important for any profession. Like, it just takes one person to mess up an entire project, an entire season, to damage you guys beyond, you know, repair.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you have to have a, like this last season, we had everyone on board, understanding their mission, understanding their role, understanding their goal. And yeah, we still, you know, got upset in the first round, but no, we did what we could with what we had, and we didn't have a guy that was kind of not, was going through the motion. That didn't happen. I think that accumulated to, you know, us winning a title this year for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now talk about that. I mean, you had a really good season last year. You lose Garza, Nunji, CJ, Wieskamp. I don't know, what was the expectation coming into this year? And, you know, with all that turnover, like, you know, a little bit of a slow start to the season, but really playing well in the end. And obviously ends in a Big Ten championship. You know, talk about like one, coming into the season, what the expectations were, and, you know, two, how that changed and developed throughout the year.
Yeah. I mean, it always helps when you have a guy like Keegan Murray. This is like, he was like a once in a generational player. I think he'll go down as the greatest Hawkeye ever to play. I mean, that's saying something after Luke has played.
Damn.
Like, he is an unbelievable player both ways of the floor. But yeah, the expectation, like, it was weird because we're coming off a year that we're top five the entire year, the year before, and we're losing all these guys. So it's hard to rally around all these guys. That's why I thought what we did was so remarkable. It's hard to rally around a team that just lost so much and get these guys that haven't really had much experience on the same page and kind of direct them, you know, towards that one, you know, destination. And that, you know, that was a title and getting to the NCAA tournament. Honestly, I think that was our first goal because no one thought we could do that. And once we kind of went through the season, to answer your second part of your question, and realizing we're beating these really great teams, like we beat Virginia on the road to begin the season, we realized, like, you know, man, maybe we can do more here than just make the NCAA tournament. And, you know, obviously that's kind of what we did.
It's tough to, especially for the young guys, and it's different in football because there's, you know, there's five guys on the court. Everyone can play a little bit bigger role, but those young guys, a lot of times going back to, you know, your mind or your thoughts or your biggest enemy or whatever the quote was earlier. It's like, if you set expectations in your head that are, you know, you give yourself a ceiling, it's going to be harder to bust through that ceiling, especially if you're a young guy and you just think like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be a rebuilding year. Right. And whatever y'all did, it worked because you found a way to get everybody on the same page, like you said, and that culture, what, I mean, you can talk about maybe how you guys focus on that in the off season or manage that through the middle of the season, but that's more important than just like, what is this guy's basketball skills? Right. Cause that's what helped you guys go win a Big Ten championship.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. You know, it's just like what I said, having the whole team on the same page is the really hard thing to do at this level because you have so many guys with different agendas. You have guys that want to go to the NBA. You got guys that, you know, just want to get theirs and not really worry about, you know, team accolades. And, you know, we had a guy that, you know, obviously was worried about that, but he didn't show it. And he wanted to make sure that what we were doing was, you know, for the team, everything that we did on a day-by-day basis. And I think that's what's really important to take away from the season, because I mean, there was an instance where I came back, I was like, man, what if we just put up a goose egg and don't do anything this year? This is gonna be a miserable way, you know, and selfishly, like, coming back and, you know, take heat for the rest of my life. But you know, everything always works out in the end.
Yeah. What was you guys' like mantra that you know, that you guys were kind of like took to work every day? So like our senior year, you know, we read the book, The Slight Edge. And so it was, ours is like the Iowa Edge. Do something a little bit extra, or do one thing just a little bit better way. So that all those small decisions add up over time. What was like your guys' mantra that was kind of like the core of your guys' culture?
This kind of actually started back our sophomore year. We went, so the leaders we had this year, you know, our captains were myself and Connor, obviously. So we were on that sophomore year team where we went 14-19. It was just fucking miserable. Like, we didn't want to go to public. Like, people were going to shame us and stuff like that. So we had a little mantra saying, fuck spring break. And we did hashtag FSB every time we kind of were doing stuff. Yeah. So because we were on spring break our sophomore year, and we knew what it was like watching all these teams play and see a tournament. Mm-hmm. So after that year, like, we kind of created that saying, and ever since then, we've always kind of been saying it whenever, you know, during the summer, like, fuck spring break in the huddle, or yeah, just little things like that to remind us, like, you know, I think it can be damaging to think about that, you know, that destination sometimes, but like, we kind of thought of it, like, if you think about your destination, it's going to help kind of traject where you're going to go through the season because you have that goal, right, of where you want to end up. So that was really important for us, definitely.
And it's not even you know, that sort of phrase isn't even so much focused on the destination as it is the negative connotation of that time of year if you're on the wrong side of the fence.
Right.
That's a t-shirt, J-Bo. Come on. Now that's a t-shirt.
Honestly, man, that's a t-shirt that'll sell. You should probably,
the walk-ons can sell that. We're an unfiltered brand. We could do a little NIL deal there.
I'm an unfiltered person, so maybe we have to do something.
Well, and that was on my list too, is to get us away from necessarily the stuff on the court. There's a lot of stuff that happened sort of off the court, which you somehow, some way, were always a part of. And I love this because it kind of shows the depth of you as a person. You mentioned sophomore year, you started to become more vocal on the court, but you've always been a social media guy. You've always been, you started your own podcast, advocated for athletes across the country with the NIL stuff. Has that always been you? And what goes into some of those things of, you know, branching, you stream on Twitch occasionally or for a while you would, like, what's with all this other stuff that you don't always see with, like, you know, like Keegan Murray isn't doing some of this stuff. What is it about you that attracts you to those things?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very vocal on social media. I would say 99% of the time I use it as like a, I would say 98% of the time I use it as a way to not really poke fun, but use it in a fun way. Cause yeah. I think it can be beneficial for, you know, there's good sides and bad sides to it, but vocally, like I kind of like grown up, I was always really quiet. I still am kind of a quiet person, to be honest. I know social media kind of would say differently, but I speak on things that I am knowledgeable in, and I don't really go outside that box really. And sometimes that has got me in trouble in times, but you know, that's who I am as a person. Like, I'm not going to sit here and blabber on stuff I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, because there's a lot of people like that out there. So I think when I get confident in stuff like that, I kind of just go on the vocal side of things and wanting to share my, not really opinion, but what my facts are.
You don't want to talk about Roe v. Wade next or something like that, or
fuck no. I have no interest in that. I have no interest in doing stuff like that. But like the college athlete, right? Like I feel like I was really knowledgeable in that situation, and I've been through the experience of an athlete. You know, I've met the president of NCAA twice. I've met with these U.S. senators. I've done all this stuff on the legal side of things, and you know, help try to pass legislation in the state and nationally. So, you know, that's something I'm knowledgeable in. I always will continue to, you know, talk about stuff like that. And, you know, I don't really go outside that box ever of not knowing what the hell I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, good and a rare trait these days. Everyone thinks they knows everything about whatever the current issue is of the day. Going back to that, you know, obviously we have NIL now. How do you feel like that's changed college athletics and the experience of the college athlete? And then I got a follow-up question to that.
Yeah, I think it's a weird time right now with it all, because there is pretty much everything we're seeing now has already been happening. So like yes. These kids being paid all millions of dollars, like it's been happening for decades now. It's yeah. Just finally somewhat legal, and there's no restraint from the NCAA. The NCAA is going to have to do something. I think they are planning to do something. I think they had a meeting with the NIL subcommittee, and they're planning to, you know, pass some policy changes or whatever for these collectives. But mm-hmm. I love it, because I am a player advocate, and I always will be an advocate for the players, and any freedoms that they get, they deserve. You know, they're basically the only profession that has any restraint on them financially. So at the end of the day, if they're getting money, I don't see it as a problem. And, you know, the game will be the same. You know, the same passion will be in there, I believe, because, you know, we see it at the professional level already. So my opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about on this podcast a few times before. It's like, how in America can you tell a kid that he can't go make money on his own? It's just downright un-American. Where do you see it going from here? And, like, do you see it taking the next tier of college athletes actually getting paid by the universities? Or – How do you see the evolution of, you know, these big, huge universities and the NCAA make a lot of money with the relationship to the college athletes?
Yeah, I believe, you know, I'm still doing work with NCPA. I'm actually employed by them still. I'm going up on a year. So I'm still doing some advocating work, stuff I can't talk about, obviously. But I do see kind of the – I do see NCAA kind of shifting – towards a revenue sharing model. And, you know, obviously there's going to be downfalls to any model, but I believe that's kind of going to phase out kind of funding for these other sports that aren't kind of producing revenue. And, you know, I still believe they're going to be funded somehow, some way. You know, if they're important to people, they're going to be funded, whether that's crowdfunding or whatever, to that extent. But, you know, I see like basketball, the Power Five conference breaking off from NCAA in the next couple of years. And they're kind of formulate their own kind of division, and all these high major schools are essentially by themselves. But I mean, you've already seen that with NCAA or with college football. Like, college football is essentially off by themselves. Like, these bowl games are ran by individual companies generate 100% of the time. So they're not really tied to the NCAA anymore. They're kind of in their own division already. So I think basketball will kind of take that to a step farther and break to that kind of revenue sharing model that I was alluding to.
Yeah. I mean, you can even say like the NCAA was just like 2 years ago, I remember when they come up with like the COVID guidelines, like each conference, just whatever, make your own rules. And it's like,
it's so stupid.
Why do we even have the NCAA if you're deferring these huge decisions to the conferences? Like you're basically eliminating the need for you. So it's like, what's stopping these five conferences that make all the money just going off and doing their own thing?
Yeah, I mean, they're not enforcing anything, essentially, and they're just kind of being a voice for the public. You know, you saw that with the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago when we started, do the non-NCAA property movement. You know, they're just a voice to kind of ease the public on what they want things to happen. You know, they could have done something decades ago about NIL. You know, there's a mess right now, and I'm glad. I wouldn't even call it a mess because players are getting money and they deserve to if they're getting paid. Like, why not take the money? But they could have done something a long time ago to kind of ease the transition, and they kept lobbying to Congress nonstop, and they're still doing it. And I don't think that's changing. So that's why I think, the NCAA will fizzle out in the next couple of years for sure.
I do too. When all this started happening, and over the course of COVID, it was also the NCAA or the athletes basically putting their foot down for good, and you were a part of that. In my mind that whole time, because I'm always thinking on like a comedy level or a content level, is like, it would be really funny to do a video of like the NCAA headquarters, and you go into their office there, you go into their offices, and like at the first cubicle is some guy, and he's just like playing Snake on his computer. And then you go down the hall, and they're just like making hot dogs in the break room. It's just like, and finally they get to the end of like the place, and everyone's just like, what do you guys do here? And they're like, we don't know. Like, it would just be an incredible skit.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
I do want to note that I have actually one of our ex-managers, he was on the staff actually for a year. He works from NCAA. He's a phenomenal individual. Like, he's very smart. There's some great people that work there. The leadership is the fucked up part. There is no leadership. There is no way of trajectory for their company. Or I say it's a company because it is. It's not a nonprofit organization. They don't have a mission. They're just business. Out there. Yeah, it's a business, 100%.
Yeah, they're a front for all the schools, basically.
Right.
Yeah. It's
right.
Like, like in business, like big pharma, for example, all these pharmaceutical companies pay for this trade group who then does the lobbying to Congress.
Yeah. And
the face for all the bad things that they do, basically. So you can't blame Pfizer or something like that. No.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not the University of Michigan that's not paying their athletes. It's the NCAA won't allow it, but the University of Michigan and 50 other schools are, it's part of the NCAA saying, hey, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't even know how they've existed this long. I hope Jay Billis takes over, but
that would be sick. That'd be great.
Yeah. I think it's in motion, but unless they start enacting some reforms and start having some actual guidelines and enforcement and regulations to the NIL stuff and, college athlete issues going forward, then they're going to basically become obsolete in their mission, basically.
Yeah. With the NIL stuff too, it is crazy right now. And we're probably going to do like a whole episode where we pull up some of the crazier examples that have come out recently. You're seeing some of that. I saw something like there's a Miami guy playing basketball, and he's like, I'm not coming back unless my NIL goes up this next year. All this bullshit that you're seeing. I still think that it was like, what, June or July 1st last year that this all went into effect. So we're not even a year in. I truly believe myself that there's going to be a 2 to 3 year transition period where we see a bunch of crazy shit. And then where the money's coming from, that side of things is going to realize, like, our money's not getting us what we wanted. Like in some cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to smooth itself out, and people are going to realize, oh, that investment wasn't worth it. And a lot of the players, though they may be getting NIL deals, they're also going to realize, shit, there's only so many spots at the school for playing time. Like, just because there's a ton of NIL money now doesn't mean that there's more than 11 guys on the field at once in football, or that there's more than five out there on the court in basketball. So there's still some pretty infrastructure based things in place that are going to balance things out in the end, in my mind.
I just got one question for you, and we've kind of talked about it a little bit on our podcast, and it's a weird dynamic. What do you think happens when the 18-year-old freshman comes in, is making more money than the coach and half the seniors?
I hope so. Like, I don't even know why that would be a weird dynamic, like, from, like, criticism, like, players making more money, and, like, there's, like, a team chemistry issue, like, X players making a million, and I'm like, there's literally a whole profession just above the next level that are doing that. Like, coaches are making less than the players. If there is a team chemistry issue, they're not winning games, and therefore they're not making money.
Yes. I was just gonna say, and it's so funny when they're like, well, but yeah, they do that in the NFL and the NBA because they're adults. It's like, oh
yeah,
the NBA's average age was less than the Iowa Hawkeyes this year.
It really was.
So it's like, what makes them an adult? Like, just the fact that they're getting paid, that doesn't change anything about how they work within the team chemistry. And then, like you said, if it does start to cause issues, none of them are going to end up being paid in 3 months anyway, because they're going to be trash and they're going to be bottom of the league. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah. I don't know what this problem or the solution is. Like, it's
through your ad. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just complaining what you were saying. Like, there's going to be a transition period. Like, you're 100% correct.
Yeah. Through the advocacy and being vocal, and, you know, you started a podcast. I don't know if you're going to continue that or where that goes or what you do from here.
Fuck no.
You're shaking your head no. See, hey, listen, podcast game ain't for everybody, baby.
Well, no, I love doing podcasts. Like, I'm hoping I want to start another one soon. Yeah. I had a bad experience, and I'm hoping, but I love listening to podcasts.
It's great, but it's awesome. On the side of making it and producing things, it's not always as smooth as people think it is.
It's a lot of work.
Thank you. Oh, validation from J-Bo. I do everything on this show.
I don't know. I don't feel like it's that hard to do.
Yeah, you wouldn't, huh? Through all of that and being vocal and doing all this stuff as an athlete, did you ever find it? Was there ever moments where you were like, damn, am I doing too much here? And should I be focusing more on the court, or am I balancing this enough? Or was there ever a question of that? Or did it always feel natural?
I was just being me, honestly. And I'm still like the same person. Like, I would like to think I haven't changed really much at all since I got to Iowa and accomplished what I have individual wise and team wise. So, you know, obviously there's been like instances, you know, when I getting knocked out downtown from an Iowa State football player. And I take the rivalry too far of talking shit to Iowa State? Like, there's obviously those kind of thoughts that take come in my head.
Einstein, hey, man, fuck State, all right?
Einstein's 2020, but yeah.
Yeah. But, like, honestly, like, everything I've done, you know, if someone talks shit, if they talk shit to me, I'm going to talk shit to them. Like, that's who I was raised. I was raised in three older brothers. Like, I didn't take no shit from anyone. So I'm the same exact person, and I will continue to be, like, the same way. I just feel like I'm more wise now, just because I've experienced a little more. Obviously I'm still, you know, somewhat young, so I can have a little more experiences left to learn, but, you know, I'm not going to change from the kind of the personality that I have.
I don't love that you got knocked out downtown, but the fact that it was over some Iowa State, Iowa shit is kind of, I like that.
the word I can't say it. The trials, I can't.
Don't speak on it.
I can't speak on it.
I will say this as a general of that happening, because it's not like you're the first person that's ever happened to, right? You start mixing alcohol and downtown and college guys together, and like shit happens. In fact, I've seen it happen between both teammates. As an athlete, and you come in, and I'm sure McCaffrey and the coaches talk about this with you guys as well. You go downtown on the weekend, and as an athlete, you're a target, right? And how was there? I don't even know if I want to touch on the topic. It's a learning experience, right? Because you realize, like, oh shit, this is real. Like, if if someone wants to take a shot at, and step up to the big, bad college athlete, like they will think that they can do that. Right. And they don't see that there's any barriers or legality to whatever their actions may be. We were always told by KF, like, hey,
potential for the athlete than it is for whoever wants to take a shot, you know?
Right. Yeah. You're fiddle with your mic again, Kev. It's always like, you know, that guy, whoever was downtown with you, he's not going to be on the news, right? In your case, kind of, but it's always going to be athlete that's front page or whoever gets in trouble. What do you have to say to like younger athletes who are coming into college who, you know, social situations, going downtown, alcohol involved? Like, what's the advice there? Or what'd you learn, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I learned a lot. You know, the first thing before I answer that, the first thing for me, like, I will say this, like, the guy I was talking to wasn't even like, it would be different. I would have had a totally different experience with the guy that I was talking to. Actually, this is the one that hit me. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I felt like from that aspect, like if you're going to hit me, like come up, like the guy was talking to me, like, yeah, and do it face to face, which was really frustrating. And it was hard for me emotionally trying to deal with all that. But, you know, just like learning wise, like understanding, like exactly what you said, like you're what you have going for you is a lot of other kids' dreams of being in your shoes, and you are living a dream that kids want to be in. And sometimes that's a good thing. And sometimes there's some jealousy that occur, whether it's from a rivalry standpoint or just from, you know, kids just don't like you. And you, at the end of the day, you have to understand that they have nothing to lose. They'll do whatever they can to try to be noticed. And
yep,
that's definitely, you know, what I took away from it. And, you know, I get, if I would do it again, you know, I'd still talk back to the guy because he was talking shit. So I have the same personality. Like, I won't change from that aspect, but I do wish things didn't escalate like I did. And if you're a young kid coming to college with that spotlight, you have to understand that there's a magnifying glass wherever you go, and everyone knows who you are. You have to understand, you have to 100% of the time, legitimately, like 100% of the time, you have to be on your best behavior because there is always someone watching you.
Yes.
And that was personally, that was really hard to do. I'm kind of ranting on this, but that was really hard to do, like, for 6 years. Like, I was in the spotlight I basically grew up like in front of everyone. Like,
yes,
no one goes to college for 6 years in the spotlight that I did. And that was really hard at times, but, you know, like I said, I was forever grateful to, you know, come back for that final year.
Yeah, and like basketball players, you guys have it way worse than football players. Like, one, there's five of you on the court at one time and everyone can see your face clear as day. Not so much the case with football players. I mean, yeah, you might know who some of them are, you know, like the big name guys, or you might be able to spot, okay, that guy's 6'7", 330. He's probably on the football team. But, you know, like me and Clue walking down the street, we don't get recognized.
I was just going to say, Kevin and I could go downtown on a Saturday, our senior year, and people would have no clue.
You're more recognizable now. Like, people, if you go in Iowa City now, though, you'll probably be more recognizable than senior year, I would bet.
Actually, 100% true.
100%.
100% true. Yeah.
I wanted you
by a million now. Yeah. It's like, you know, walking into class on a Thursday back senior year is like, No one, whoever that guy is, whatever.
This is just some dude. He's kind of built. I was really hoping, for comedy's sake, Jordan, you would have said, if I could do it again, I would have ducked and hit him with the roundhouse. but no, it's you're right. You have a lot to lose and they have nothing to lose. And it can get into some dicey situations. Couple shorter rapid fire stuff so we can let you go. You had several big shots, buzzer beaters, to win games. The Wisconsin one, this one against Indiana this year. You seem to have a knack for like finding yourself in that moment. And God knows I didn't with a basketball in my hands. Do you think that that's an innate ability? Because there's even for people, because there's a lot of great shooters out there, but when it's on the line, they're not always the guy you want the ball in their hands, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Did you always feel that was sort of this innate ability you had, or do you think that can be learned to be the clutch guy?
I think, like, yeah, you can definitely have that ability and experience it and learn from it and become that kind of player. But like, everything I've experienced at a college level, obviously it could be different than a professional level, but there's just guys that just can't ever kind of have that mentality. Like, I've always had the mentality, like, even if I'm playing the worst game of my entire career, that I want the ball at the end of the game and have an opportunity to, you know, make something happen. You know, I was fortunate to have the ball in my hands. I always just try to make the most of it. And I thank God every day for giving me that opportunity, because I've always had that confidence. And I mean, that's the first step, is confidence, really. And I always have had a lot of confidence.
That probably goes back to those 500 make mornings, huh?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The shoes at Iowa State, pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. Iowa State thought you were a fucking cheap bitch, but they want to
call me a cheap bitch, but I mean they went for $26,000, and I'm doing the check presentation next week, and I, like, it's the coolest thing ever. I'm gonna have, this kind of be the first publicly thing I'll kind of say about details, but we'll have, like, the kid that won the shoes there with me, and their family, and the money amount is actually being donated directly to a spot that's kind of hit close to home and in college athletics, and not college athletics, but in athletics as a whole. There's a thing called the Adams Project, and it's going to the pediatric cardiology wing, and my AU coach, his daughter had issues with her heart. So to have that, like, fun little thing, you talk about the shoes, like, yeah, it was awesome, and I hopefully that made the rivalry better.
Absolutely.
But yeah, but I think it went to a really great cause, and Iowa State fans can hate me for it, but I'm very glad I did that, because it accomplished a lot.
That's pretty cool. And not only that, but you can talk about, you just yesterday or 2 days ago put your freaking yellow script jersey up for auction as well.
Yep.
So if anybody wants to, how long do they have to, this comes out tomorrow, how long do they have to go make a bid on that?
I'm probably going to do a winner next weekend, or this upcoming weekend, probably Saturday or Sunday. I'll probably do something on Instagram Live or something, but it's really easy. Just if you donate $10, you get a ticket and do whatever, how much you want. So hopefully it'll be kind of a cool story again, like with the kid winning his shoes. So, like, the kid that won the shoes the first auction, he, like, saved $110 off a garage sale, and he put it all into Venmo, and it was really cool. I actually went to their house a year and a half ago to give him the shoes, and I played basketball with him for an hour or so, and it was the coolest experience ever. He was an 8-year-old kid, and he's 10 now, so it's a little different. I think he's a little grown up, but
awesome.
It was a really cool story.
That's pretty sweet. You don't want to keep the script jersey. There was a little conversation going on with Pat on the thing about the equipment guy.
Pat doesn't know anything. I get it. But
Pat's just a dumb kid still, huh?
He's a dumb kid. He has a lot to learn.
Lanky, man.
It does hold a lot of memories, but all I care about is that ring we're going to get, and I could sell everything. All I want is that ring, really.
I can relate with that. I got two things left. Back to your injuries and your body and being the old guy, all the jokes that you took for 6 years, like 3 years. Anything that a kid playing basketball specifically, or maybe just a young athlete, could take away from your personal knowledge of how you took care of your body, things you did to warm up for practice or cool down or do in the off season to try and stay as healthy as you could?
Take a break. I learned that the hard way. My body getting worn down after AAU seasons. I learned it from my brothers. After every season they had, they would take 2 weeks off. They wouldn't even think about basketball. And I did that every single year going in. Sometimes I was forced to with injuries, but I would take 2 weeks off and, you know, be with my family, hang out with my friends. Don't think about the sport at all. Just take your mind off of it, because it's you can struggle sometimes with your mental capacity of handling one thing at so much for so many hours per day. So that was very beneficial for me.
I love that. I would echo that too. When we would go home for like the break they're about to go home for, 3 weeks in the summer, I wouldn't even touch a football. Like wouldn't snap one rep, and then just come back. Like, I'm not going to forget how to do it. Like, we'll be fine. And then finally, the intentional free throw miss for Chris Street. That was maybe the coolest thing. How long before that happened were you planning on doing that? Were you so good at free throws? Because you're pretty damn good. that you're like, I might go for this record at some point, and if I do, I'm gonna miss? Like, did it happen that early, or was it just a thing where like, oh, I'm three away, I think I'll miss intentionally? Like, how did that go down?
Yeah, I always been. I was like 91% throughout high school, so I've always prided myself in making free throws. So I knew I kind of would get to that record. I didn't even know anything about it until I met Chris's parents, and they're literally the best people you could ever meet. And I'm not even just saying that just because how close I am with them. Like, they are the most genuine. The definition of Iowa nice, just an unbelievable family. So when I met them, I kind of knew about his story, and then I learned about the free throw record. I think I was kind of close freshman year a couple times, but sophomore year I got up to like 20. I think I was at like 21. And I think we're playing at Purdue, and I remember I was rooming with like Ryan Kreener, and I was asking him about it. I was like, man, what should I do when I get to the record? Because I feel like I shouldn't surpass that 34 mark. So that was kind of the first time we talked about it. And, you know, I just kept making it. And, you know, it was kind of a perfect situation. Happened senior night. The game was kind of away from it not really mattering. If I could do it all over again, I know Chris's dad, Mike, told me to always go for it whenever I got close next time. And I said, there's no way I would ever do that. I hopefully that record does stay intact with his name.
I think you've probably, if anyone that gives a shit about Iowa basketball and tradition cares about anything, that will go down forever. Like, they will, I guess the only way is like, if we're in like the Big Ten championship and we need free throw or something and that's when it comes, that would be tough. But yeah, man, that was pretty cool.
Appreciate it.
Kevin, you got anything else?
MJ or LeBron, why?
MJ, I don't like LeBron's antics sometimes after he gets fouled.
He does look really whiny. He's got a whiny
face. He does. I love his game, though. I respect his greatness. Nothing to take away ever from LeBron, but MJ is my guy for sure.
MJ's the GOAT. Kluber disagrees, but...
Again, different eras, man. It's like it's almost hard to compare, but I won't argue with MJ either. I do love the joke that like MJ played against plumbers.
I hate when people say that too. I was like, man, still put up points. Like the same thing, Wilt Chamberlain. Like, you still got to score 100 points. Like,
I will say this: after watching The Last Dance, I don't think, and obviously LeBron doesn't have like a super inside look at his mindset and shit, but MJ has him on the mental side of things by about 10 miles, it seems like.
The psycho. Kobe kind of was like his little brother, like in that mentality aspect.
Yeah.
He was just like crazy with that. Insane. Yeah.
I love that MJ was like an ass. Like, he was so competitive that he was an asshole. Like that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to that, that conversation we're having earlier about like coaches yelling and shit. I remember there's this one clip in The Last Dance, and he's like, you know, this might come out and people are going to be like, oh, he wasn't a nice guy. He was a tyrant. And he's like, well, yeah, I wanted to win, but I also wanted my teammates to win. So if that meant I had to get in your ass, then so be it. You know,
yeah,
it's like, it's kind of the same way with, you know, these coaches that, you know, they want to win. They want to see their players win and succeed too. It's like, it's the same thing. It's a different mentality.
And you
don't belong on the court.
Yeah, and you learn like who your real brothers are and who are really down for you when things are going shitty. Like, and that's where it comes in. Like, I'm sure MJ was like that. I mean, everyone that's a true leader understands that. Like, you have to, when you go through adversity, you find out who your brothers are, and that's when you start screaming and holding people accountable. And that's kind of the first step of learning that.
I was just going to say, there's a reason that like greatness is the tip of the spear, and there's not a lot at whatever that level may be for a certain sport. And it's due to a lot of factors. And part of that is the absolute fanatical, maniacal mindset that you have to take with everything you do to get there. And that's just part of it. So Jordan, man, appreciate you joining the show.
Of course.
It only took 3 years. so we finally got you on here. We've had Big Cat on here. We've had a couple other people on here. We had Bear on here. Luca's busy. Luca left me on red several times, but that's
okay. We had his dad, though, a couple of times.
We had his dad twice.
Did his dad ever like come in and talk to you guys?
No.
He's an interesting character.
He's an interesting cat.
He's out there.
I love it. Hope you all enjoyed listening to J-Bo. Hope you guys are able to take away a little something. Episode 315 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons brought to you by DRF Sports. We'll be back to you on Thursday. Till then, peace.